We want to have you turn, please, to 2 Corinthians chapter number 9. 2 Corinthians chapter number 9, and we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 6 this evening. We're still dealing with the subject of principles of Christian giving, and we have one more chapter to deal with in this main subject of principles of Christian giving. I say one more chapter, we have one more message. We'll come to, Lord willing, we will conclude chapter 9 next week and then get off on to other things. It seems like I've been preaching about money for quite a while, and I don't usually do that, but when the text deals with it, we deal with whatever the text says because it's God's word. Something we must all realize is that none of our money is really ours in the first place. It is God's. He has merely entrusted it to us so that we may use it wisely. King David stated in 1 Chronicles 29:14, "But who am I and what are my people that we should be able to offer so willingly after this sort? For all things come of thee, and of thine own have we given thee." Something else which we must realize is that God does not need our money. I know I've heard financial pleas from pulpits that sound like poor God is in trouble financially. But he's not been forced into an austerity program in his old age. He's not in financial trouble. He doesn't need a raise. His work is not being hindered by the lack of money. Now, I know that statement might be controversial, but that is what I believe. His work is not being hindered by the lack of money. Now, it's a little difficult for us to understand this because we think of money as being such a necessity. We think of our church as not being able to do things which we might want to do because we can't afford them. But consider this, that it actually may not be God's will for us to do these things when he hasn't supplied the means to do them. I remind you that the principles of Christian giving in 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8 through 9 do not concern the support of the local church through the tithes and offerings of the people. They concern instead the collection of a one-time offering to help the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. Tithing is taken for granted. Remember that the principles of Christian giving found in these chapters do not teach the practice of what is called faith promise missions practiced in some churches. Forcing these chapters to teach faith promise missions is an example of forcing the scriptures to say things the scriptures are not really saying in order to support an agenda. We should never force the scriptures to say things God was not saying in order to promote our objectives, regardless of how worthy our objectives may seem to us. The giving in these chapters is for a one-time special offering and is not intended to support the local church in Corinth. Please understand that I am not against local churches or individuals practicing what is called faith promise missions, if they choose to. What I am against is forcing meaning on the text of Scripture, which is not actually there. We are not to add to or take away from God's words. We are not to make the Scriptures say things they are not saying. We've already seen some principles of Christian giving in 1 Corinthians 16 for this one-time gift to the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. We saw that giving for this special offering is to be done in and through the local church. In addition, we saw that the time of giving is the first day of the week. We saw that the giving is to be regular, that is, on the first day of the week. We saw that the participants in the giving are every one of you. We saw that the basis for this special offering is as God has prospered you. And we saw that the manner of the giving was to be a voluntary free will offering to God. In 2 Corinthians 8, we saw that giving is a grace. We also saw that giving is to be sacrificial and that it's to be done willingly. We also saw that giving is to be done eagerly. Giving is also to be done spiritually and voluntarily. Giving demonstrates the sincerity of a believer's love. Giving is to follow the example set by Christ. Giving is to be done according to ability. We also saw that church funds are to be handled completely above board. As we move into chapter 9, we see in verses 1 through 15 more principles of Christian giving. Paul called upon the Corinthian believers to set aside their money for their gift in advance. We will see that giving always pays dividends. We will see that Paul then describes what Christian giving should be like, and Paul will close this section by discussing the rewards of giving. Remember, tithing is something that every believer can afford to do. Giving over and above the tithe is according as God has prospered us. As we go into chapter 9, verses 1 through 5, we see that money was to be set aside in advance. Remember, this is for the special offering. Paul knew that it was not really necessary for him to write the Corinthians regarding the collection for the saints in Jerusalem, according to 9:1, because he knew they were prepared for their gift a year earlier and their zeal had encouraged other churches. Nevertheless, Paul was sending these three men mentioned in chapter 8 in advance of his coming to Corinth to make certain their offering would be ready when he would arrive, lest men from Macedonia should come with Paul and find the collection unprepared, and both Paul and the Corinthian believers be embarrassed. For this reason, Paul thought it wise to send Titus and the two others to make certain that the collection was ready. So while it was not necessary for him to say it, he said it anyhow. Have you ever done anything like that? Sure you have. And so have I. We read in verses 1 through 5, "For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. For I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast of you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that, as I said, ye may be ready. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Therefore I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty, and not as of covetousness." According to verse 1, Paul is speaking graciously, and he states that he realizes that it is not necessary for him to write to the Corinthian believers regarding the collection for the poor saints in Jerusalem. I remind you of verse 1, "For as touching the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you. 4 introduces the continuation of the thought of chapter 8, and it's understood in the sense of now, as touching the ministering is concerning or about the ministry or the service, and it's used in reference to the collection for the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. To the saints is used to restrict the meaning of the ministering to being the specific ministering to the saints in Jerusalem. It is superfluous, means it is unnecessary. They, meaning the Corinthian believers, were already aware of it and had been preparing for it a year earlier. Although superfluous or unnecessary, he was still writing about the Corinthian believers ministering to the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. It is a gentle reminder that it was time for the Corinthians to complete what they had already begun. Now you remember, they didn't have email. You'll remember they didn't have text messaging. And they were quite a distance from each other. So consequently, they couldn't communicate quite the same directness that we do today. I find texting and emailing wonderful when it comes to contacting people at a distance. I'm sure the missionaries do as well. For me refers to Paul, and to write actually functions as the subject of is in the Greek text, and its tense indicates ongoing action in the sense of to be writing, and describes what Paul is doing at this time in his life. What is he doing? He is in the process of writing 2 Corinthians. To you means to you Corinthian believers. Verse 2 explains why it was not necessary for Paul to write to the Corinthian believers regarding the collection for the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. They were ready with the collection a year earlier. He goes on in verse 2, "For I know the forwardness of your mind, for which I boast to you to them of Macedonia, that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal hath provoked very many." 4 introduces this explanation in the sense of because. I know is used in the sense of I see, I perceive, or I recognize. And what Paul knows, perceives, or recognizes is the forwardness of your mind, which speaks of the Corinthian believers' exceptional interest in being of service in the sense of your willingness, your readiness, or your goodwill. The term was previously used in 8:19, where it was translated ready mind. The same term was used in 8:11, where it was translated a readiness, and in 8:12, where it was translated a willing mind. For which is about which, or concerning which. I boast is simply I, meaning Paul, I boast about, I am boasting about, or I mention in order to boast of, or I'm proud of. Of you is concerning you, or about you, Corinthian believers, to them of Macedonia is to the Macedonians. You'll remember that Macedonia is northern Greece. You'll remember that Achaia is southern Greece. Macedonia included cities like Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. Achaia included Corinth. To them of Macedonia is to the Macedonians. That introduces the content of Paul's boast that Achaia was ready a year ago. I've already said Achaia speaks of southern Greece. It's called the Peloponnese. And if you look at it, it's the large portion of land connected by the mass of northern Greece by the Peloponnese, a little 6 mile wide neck of land. And it was something that they just were used to. Southern Greece, it is including Corinth, but it also would include some who were not actually in the city of Corinth. It was ready, means was prepared. The believers in the church at Corinth were ready or prepared to take on the task of gathering money for the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. It does not mean that their contribution had already been completely gathered and was ready to be picked up by someone and taken to Jerusalem. Their desire to participate in this collection is described as a readiness to will in 2 Corinthians 8:11. 2 Corinthians 8:10 and 11 say, "And herein I give my advice, for this is expedient for you who have begun before not only to do but also to be forward a year ago. Now therefore perform the doing of it, that as there was a readiness to will, so there may be a performance also of that which ye have." A year ago is from last year. "And your zeal speaks of the Corinthian believers' intense interest in the collection for the impoverished saints in Jerusalem. Hath provoked suggests has caused some to react in a way that it suggests acceptance of a challenge in the sense of aroused or provoked. And it's been translated in a way which emphasizes the result of its action. Very many is the majority or the most. According to verse 3, in spite of its being unnecessary for Paul to write to the Corinthian believers regarding the collection, he has sent Titus and the two fellow believers to make certain the Corinthians are ready for the collection to be picked up and taken to Jerusalem. Yet have I sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain in this behalf, that, as I said, ye may be ready." Yet introduces a statement in mild contrast to what Paul wrote in verse 1, that it was superfluous to write to them concerning the collection. This usage of the word is often translated, "but." "Have I sent" is "I sent." And it's been translated in a way which emphasizes the result of its action. "Have I sent" is understood from the viewpoint of the readers rather than from the viewpoint of the writer. He had not yet actually sent them while he was still in the process of writing 2 Corinthians. But he would send them later with this letter after he finished writing it. By the time the Corinthian believers received this letter, he would have sent them. The brethren is the brothers and refers to Titus and the other two brothers mentioned in 2 Corinthians 8:18 through 22. "Lest" introduces a negative purpose clause. It's understood in the sense of "in order that not," or "for the purpose that not." Our boasting is an expression of pride in the sense of our boast, or what is said by us in boasting. Our boasting of you is the boasting concerning, or the boasting on behalf of you Corinthian believers, and it's used to restrict or limit the content of Paul's boast, that it should be in vain, that it should be caused to be without result or effect in the sense of should be destroyed, should be rendered void, should be rendered of no effect, or should be empty. "In this behalf" is "in this case" or "in this matter." That is understood in the sense of "in order that" or "for the purpose that," as I said, is just as I was saying. "Ye may be ready, is you Corinthian believers may be ready, or you may be prepared. The tense of may be ready indicates you may be in a state of having been prepared. Its tense indicates action completed in the past with the result continuing, and it indicates a state of being. Paul was not concerned that they would be making a contribution, but that they would not yet have finished the task of collecting the money by the time he arrived in Corinth. Paul wanted the Corinthians to be ready when the time arrived that the money was to be given to him and his associates and taken to Jerusalem. The Corinthians needed to make certain it was already taken care of. And then Paul indicates in verse 4 that it would not be good for him and the representatives of the churches in Macedonia to arrive in Corinth and find them unprepared for the collection. And Paul would find his confidence in the Corinthian believers embarrassing. Lest haply, if they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, we, that we say not, ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. Lest haply is not something we would typically say in our modern English, but it means lest somehow, or lest perhaps, and it indicates a negative perspective expressing misgiving. Lest introduces a negative purpose clause, and it's understood in connection with we should be ashamed. And it means in order that, or for the purpose that, we not be ashamed. Haply is somehow, in some way, or perhaps. If introduces a conditional statement whose structure in the Greek text indicates that no assumption can be made regarding its truthfulness. If they of Macedonia come with me and find you unprepared, may or may not actually prove to be true. They may come and find them prepared. Time will tell. Its conclusion is, we, that we say not ye, should be ashamed in this same confident boasting. The truth of the conclusion is dependent on the truth of the condition. If the condition is true, the conclusion will also be true. But if the condition proves to be false, the conclusion will also be false. If they find the Corinthians unprepared, Paul and the Corinthian believers will be ashamed. However, if they find the Corinthians prepared, Paul and the Corinthian believers will not be ashamed. They of Macedonia is the Macedonians. As I've already said, Macedonia is northern Greece, and it includes cities such as Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. They of Macedonia come with me, suggests come together with me. And it suggests that some from Macedonia will actually be traveling with Paul to Corinth. And find you unprepared is discovered, you Corinthian believers, not to be ready. We should be ashamed as we be put to shame, or we be humiliated. That we say not ye is also a negative purpose clause. It's in order that, or for the purpose that, we, meaning Paul, say not, that is, not say, or lest we say ye, meaning you Corinthian believers. Paul, like we often do, is saying something without saying it. Not only will he be ashamed, put to shame, or humiliated, the Corinthian believers will also be ashamed, put to shame, or humiliated if they are unprepared when Paul and some men from Macedonia arrive in Corinth and discover that they are not prepared to give the collection so that they may take it with them to Jerusalem. It will be embarrassing for both Paul and the Corinthian believers, but it will really be their problem rather than his. In this same confident boasting speaks of the plan that Paul has devised for action, which refers to the collection for the saints in Jerusalem. According to verse 5, Paul thought it advisable to send his representatives to Corinth to make certain their contribution was prepared to be received. 2 Corinthians 9:5 says, "Therefore, I thought it necessary to exhort the brethren that they would go before unto you and make up beforehand your bounty, whereof ye had notice before, that the same might be ready as a matter of bounty and not as of covetousness." Well, let's see if we can break that down and help you with its understanding. "Therefore" draws an inference from verse 4, and it's understood in the sense of accordingly, consequently, then, or so. "I thought it necessary," obviously I as Paul, it's "I considered it," or "I regarded it necessary." To exhort suggests to make a strong request for something in the sense of to request, to implore, or to entreat. The brethren is the brothers, and refers to Titus and the two brothers mentioned in 2 Corinthians 8:18 through 22, whom Paul is sending to Corinth with this letter. The content of Paul's exhortation to the brethren is that they would go before you, before unto you, and make up beforehand your bounty. That suggests in order that, or for the purpose that, they would go before suggests that these three men would precede Paul, and so as to be ahead of him, meaning ahead of Paul, in the sense of go on before me or go ahead of me. Paul intends to come to Corinth in the near future, but after these other three men have already come to Corinth. "Unto you" means unto you Corinthian believers and indicates the destination of the three men. And "make up beforehand" is arrange beforehand, get ready in advance, or make arrangements for in advance. These three men were to let the Corinthian believers know that Paul would soon be arriving in Corinth and advise them that the collection needed to be ready. Your bounty, whereof ye had noticed before, is your announced beforehand bounty, your previously announced bounty, or your foretold bounty. It indicates that they had previously made a commitment to this collection, and Paul is now asking that they keep their commitment. Their commitment may even have been a specific amount, but Paul had not assigned this commitment to them. They made it themselves. Your bounty, where "your" is plural and refers to the Corinthian believers, means your blessing. And in this context, it's understood in the sense of your generous gift. "That the same might be ready" is that this, meaning your previously announced bounty or your generous gift, be ready. As a matter of bounty is simply as a generous gift, and not as of covetousness suggests, and not just as or like a gift that is grudgingly granted by avarice or by extortion. The gift is to be up to them. It is to be their choice and not given grudgingly or of necessity. Apparently, the church in Corinth followed through and completed their gift. Paul refers to it in Romans 15, 25 through 26, which he wrote shortly before he left Corinth. Okay, Paul is not yet in Corinth, but he's heading to Corinth. When he gets there, he will find that the Corinthian church followed through on their commitment. And so at that time, from Corinth, Paul will write the book of Romans. Romans comes shortly after, maybe 6 months or so after 1 Corinthians, where Paul writes in Romans 15, 25 through 26, "But now I go unto Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, for it hath pleased them of Macedonia," northern Greece, "and Achaia," southern Greece, "to make a certain contribution for the poor saints which are at Jerusalem." The reference to Achaia is referring to the church at Corinth, or at least includes the church at Corinth. So he reports that it's already been taken care of in Corinth in his writing to Romans. We see as we move into verse 6 that giving pays dividends. In verse 6, Paul reminds believers that they will reap in accordance with their sowing. You who have had gardens or you who have been farmers understand that you don't get anything if you don't sow it, all right? "But this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. But this I say," introduces, "he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly, and he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." That's what he was saying. He which soweth is the one who is sowing. Sparingly describes how he sows and implies in a scanty or meager manner. Shall reap or shall harvest is predictive of something which will definitely happen when someone sows sparingly. There will not be much to reap when it comes time to harvest. Also suggests in addition to his sowing sparingly. Sparingly is the same word used in the previous phrase, also sparingly. But the second sparingly has been placed in a position of emphasis in the Greek text, and it reads literally, "Sparingly also he will harvest. And he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." He which soweth is the one who is sowing. Bountifully is the one who sows generously shall reap, is predictive of a future event which will definitely happen if he sows bountifully. Also suggests in addition to his sowing bountifully. Bountifully is understood in the sense of generously. Now this is a scriptural principle. We see it in Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. "There is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, but it tendeth to poverty. The liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself." Proverbs 19, 17, "He that hath pity upon the poor lendeth unto the Lord, and that which he hath given will he repay him again." Luke 6, 38, "Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured to you again." That means with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. So when it comes to our giving, let's give generously, but let's do it scripturally, realizing that all of our money belongs to God. Yet use what he has given us responsibly. Something. You give as you're able. Remember, Jesus saw rich men casting a lot of money into the treasury, and he saw a poor widow woman casting in two mites, two very small coins. Practically nothing in terms of the amount of dollars. But Jesus said that she gave more than all of these rich men who cast in out of their abundance. God knows your ability. Do what you can. Don't worry about somebody else. You have to manage your own monies. But give generously and do it scripturally. It belongs to the Lord anyway. Let's give it through the local church, which is His program. Don't scatter your tithes and offerings all over the country in Christian organizations that are not really as scriptural as they make you seem or may want you to think. God's program is the local church. That's where your tithes and offerings ought to be going. Let's go ahead and pray, and we'll sing our closing hymn then. Our Father, thank you that we have this opportunity to study this portion of thy word. Help us to understand it. Help us to apply its truths to our hearts and minds. In Jesus' name, amen.